Okay, this is side two, an interview with Reverend Lewis Edward Grant. This is Kelly Navies, and we were just wrapping up a discussion of your education at Fruitland Bible Institute. Mm-hmm. And so you were finished in 4 years, you were telling me?
Yeah.
So you returned to Asheville in 1970?
Well, I was in Asheville. I commuted.
Well, you were in Asheville all that time.
All the time.
You finished in 1970?
Yes.
What did you do after that?
Well, everything happened for me in 70. Basically, in 1969, December 31st, a watch night service at Dad's Church, Worldwide Baptist Tabernacle.
Repeat that, Worldwide?
Worldwide Baptist Tabernacle, yeah. My dad built that church in 1958. The Lord gave him a desire to build a tabernacle for him. And he built that without any members, just had white friends, black friends, everybody would join with him to build a tabernacle for the Lord.
Hmm.
So in 59.
Right in Asheville?
Yeah, right in Asheville.
Is it
right
still
across
there?
From his house, still there.
Okay.
He's still the pastor in 83, okay. And he's had a stroke. He's not able to handle it right now, but we're carrying on for him. So.
Okay.
But he had built that church and got things going. And so they decided, after licensing me in 66, Dad was gone quite a bit. And so they said, we're going to ordain Lewis and get him ready for the ministry completely, the way he can do everything. Because at that time, when you're licensed, you can preach, but most people didn't have a man to pastor them unless he was ordained. Without being ordained, we weren't allowed to give communion, do funerals, weddings, things of this nature. But some people have gotten lax over the years, and they let you do almost everything without ordination.
Hmm.
I always said that a person should be ordained before you license them.
Hmm.
Because once you turn a person loose to go preach, if they preach only one sermon one time that you heard and you license them and let them go, they might change the whole scripture and go out there and preach anything in the next sermon, you know. But if you prepare them for ordination, get to know them, see what they're preaching, and if they're solid and got a firm footing, then license them to go. So that's always been my thinking, that people should do it that way. But I think it's where the Bible leads it too, but we got in a rut in these areas. But I...
So you're saying 1970, a lot happened for
you. Yeah, in 69 I was ordained that night in a watch night service. And just before 12 midnight. So that really started off my 70. And in April of 70 is when I graduated from Fruitland. And in July of 70, I accepted this church where we're in now, Little Mount Zion Baptist.
Hmm.
I had been supplying for the pastor, Reverend Roscoe Burgess, at the time. He was ill, and he told the church, said, now, if you all take this young man and let him be your pastor, I'll step down and y'all can go on. He said, otherwise, I'll keep trying to hang in there. So they said, well, we'll accept him. And so in 70 of July, the same second Sunday in July, 4 years after I started preaching, I accepted this church as pastor.
I'm sorry, when you back up, you said you were supplying for him?
Yeah, I'd been supplying. Filling in.
Oh, okay.
Preaching in his place.
Okay.
And so I, that was in July. So in August of 70, I married Sandra Gudger Grant. I met her in April of 70.
Gudger, huh?
Yeah.
She might be related to me.
Oh.
Geraldine will know.
That is right, because they call Sandra cousin or something. I think JT says something about her being kin. Yeah. So I met her in April and married in August, same year.
Hmm.
And
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And in September, I was looking for a job. I borrowed $5 from Sandra to buy a license for a wedding license, marriage license.
That was quick.
And I was laying tile on Lee Walker Heights when I met her in July of that same year, because I laid tile from April through July, and the job ended July. And so in August, I was still floating off the money I had made. But in September, I needed a job, and I went out to the radio station in Black Mountain and looking for a job. Just decided to go out there. Never had any radio experience, but I went and talked to the guy at that time, Dick Jensen. He said, you may be an answer to prayer. So I've been trying to answer that prayer all along. And he started me. He said he wanted to do a black history program on the station. And he asked me if I would be willing to learn how to do it. I said, yeah.
Hmm.
So here's a white man wanting a black history program. and helped teach a young black man how to do a black history program.
Well, what kind of programming did you guys do?
Well, he just wanted me to play black music, talk about some black history, and we had Reverend Webster Lytle, who is in Hickory now, pastor of Morningstar First Baptist Church there. He was our commentator. He would do some teaching on some of the black historians, W.E.B. Du Bois, George Washington Carver, all the greats that lived and made a contribution and went on to be with our Lord. He would do the history on that and all the different, is that Dred Scott decision, is it?
Yeah.
And so while he was doing that history, I would prepare some music or something to back up some of that or have something. I played either secular or religious, and they wanted me to mix it, but I said, I like, you know, Christian music. I'm not used to secular. I don't play that. I wasn't raised on it. I always had Christian music, so they kept on trying to make me play secular and Christian, and so finally I just kept on easing my Christian music in until it became all black gospel.
So, right.
Yeah.
So and that's what you still do today.
Yeah. So we, that program ended some years ago, and then they decided to start it back a few years ago, and asked me if I'd take it back over, and what do I want to call it? I said, let's call it New Kutana.
Call it what now?
New Kutana, K-U-T-A-N-A.
What does that mean?
Kutana is a Swahili word meaning let us come together.
Oh.
Yeah.
Familiar with that. So you have that program now?
Have it now.
And you do black history on that, on the air?
Not much black history. I do some reading from some of the, a little book by, what's that, black quotations of some of the famous people, special people
I've
that
seen
were
that
out.
Book. Yeah.
Yeah. Eli somebody, I forget the name. Wow.
Yeah, I think I've seen the book.
Yeah. And do some of the quotes from there and different things and then talk about something. Sometimes I use something from Jet Magazine or something historic I've heard on the news about somebody black doing something. Just try to sort of lift the people, expose some things, and then tell them how to come out of it, and encourage our people to stay out of jail and don't go to hell and stuff like that.
Right.
Play some good music to encourage us and lift us up.
So 1975 was when they actually demolished Stevens Lee. And by this time you're established as a minister in the area and also on the radio program. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I didn't want to go get one of the bricks because I wanted to remember the school up and not torn down.
Yeah. So do you know people that got some of the bricks?
Not really. I guess almost anybody from Stevens Lee probably went and got one. I don't know if they still got them or not, but a lot of people were going, but I just didn't want to get a brick. I said,
What was that like passing by the first time after they knocked it down?
I tried not to look. Because I was angry. I thought, you know, this is so unfair. That school was stronger than a lot of buildings they've let stand. And they just tore it down to keep anybody from using it thereafter. Yeah.
So you just try not to look at it.
Yeah, try not to look at it. Let it be bygone.
What do you think the impact of the demolition was on the surrounding community?
It was sort of devastating. A lot of people sort of lost hope because it's like, you know, if they can do this and get away with it, they can do anything. And they let go, and Asheville does anything it wants to do.
What do you mean, Asheville does anything it wants to do?
Well, there, let's see, back in the urban renewal days, there were close to 900-plus homes that were torn down in order to renew the city of Asheville. But most of those were black homes. There were several black businesses that used to operate in Asheville that were destroyed. People were put in housing projects. Some were sent to over across town to homes that some of the white people had moved out of. Great big houses. Some of them didn't have a furnace in them. But they were sent there from their own little house that was compact and had their own heating system that they said the house was not up to standard, so they tore it down. And they sold them these houses and gave them a grant to help them buy it.
So you see the demolition of Stevens Lee is in the same category as his urban renewal?
Yeah. Because it was a change, and they call it a way to help integrate the city. But the more you move black people in one community, the faster the white people move out.
Right.
So we were really buying the houses they were getting rid of.
Excuse me. So did that happen right around the same time, 70s?
Yeah, well, really it happened In the 60s and 70s, yeah. Okay. It just really got out of hand. It was just, one fellow was into it. My mother told him, said, Logan Delaney was in that. He was running the...
Logan Delaney, who's that?
He was running the opportunity, Urban Renewal for City Redevelopment. My mother told him, said, Mr. Delaney, you did better in the classroom. You need to go back in there and teach our people instead of taking their homes. They tried to get Daddy to sell his house, and then they tried to get him to sell the church as well, just so they could come through and cut a road down through that area.
And he didn't do it.
No. We fought for years. The city made it hard on him, but they even fixed the road where it would, when they did rework things, they fixed it where water was coming down the street and would flood the house.
Really?
Yeah. And God somehow made the water cut every time it get close to the house. It wouldn't even come in, it just cut.
Really?
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
It's awesome. And I think the grass grew faster than they wanted to, because they had cut down this big mound and fixed things and leveled it off, and the whole area was changed up. And so all this water and mud would come down. You'd have a mud hole down there, but still didn't come in the house.
Mm. Does it still do that?
No. Yeah. Over the years, they had people put buildings up there after that. Mm. Yeah.
So do you participate in the Stevens Lee Alumni Association?
Haven't yet. We're going to start. Well, I have. I have done some things with some of the classes and so forth that... I've had memorial services and things like that. I've helped them in that light. I meant to go this year, but a lot of times I'm in revival or somewhere preaching or something and don't get to go. But it's a great thing to do. That school meant a whole lot to a whole lot of people. It was really a foundation for black people in Asheville.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let me just ask you one last question then. They're renovating the Stevens Lee Community Center now, and they're planning on having a hallway set aside sort of a black history in Asheville and also to remember Stevens Lee. What would you like young people to know and remember about Stevens Lee?
I guess mainly about Stevens Lee, the closeness of our people there. The comradeship. There was a lot of fellowship and love and closeness, and there was discipline. You know, you could talk to people then. They didn't just get out of hand. They had some fights at Stevens Lee. I mean, they would get some slugs going on. They would go big time fights. But at that time, the students could get in there and help stop it. But now these people come out with guns and everything, and they don't fight anymore. They just plan to murder and get it over with. But there was a closeness back in those days that is second to none. Closeness, comradeship, fellowship, relationship, respect. And I remember driving, well, that was one good thing. We drove an A-model Ford to school most of the time.
Really?
Daddy had an old A-model Ford, and we'd beg him sometimes.
You drove it?
Yeah, my brother and I. And so Daddy would let us take it to school some days. We'd run late on purpose so we'd get to drive his car. Y'all take it and go ahead. We'd drive it and take it to school, and then we were the talk of the town at that time. Driving the only ones with a A-model Ford. We'd sit up there and let everybody see it. Sometimes they'd ride with us, and we just enjoyed. But, people didn't try to take it from you. You go to school nowadays, people take your car and leave you standing or walking. But back in those days, it was an understanding. Can I ride? If you wanted them to, yeah. If not, no. Well, you go on. And you go on, So. Yep.
Well, do you have any parting thoughts?
Well, it's just good to get to know you, good to get to talk to you, and I wish you very well in your venture, and success to you, and please don't forget me when you go big in your company.
I will. Thank you, Reverend Grant.
God bless you.